Scheduled meeting of the Palm Coast City Council. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we proceed with roll call, I'd like to have a moment of silence in memory of the victims of the terrorist attacks in Paris and in France. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mayor Nenz.
Here.
Vice Mayor McGuire.
Here.
Councilmember DiLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember Nobile.
Here.
And Councilmember Shipley is excused.
Thank you. Agenda item number one, move approval of the minutes of the November 3rd City Council meeting and the November 10th City Council workshop. Are there any additions, corrections, or is there a motion for approval?
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number two, proclamation recognizing November 30th, 2015 as Shirley Chisholm Day. Mr. DiLorenzo?
Whereas Shirley Chisholm, November 30th, 1924 to January 1st, 2005, was a humanitarian, a politician, and achieved a dynamic list of firsts. She was a trendsetter before her time. Chisholm's legacy focused on the equal rights of women, children, family, and education. And whereas Shirley Chisholm made history for being the first black United States Congresswoman and making a bid for the U.S. presidency in 1972, she was an advocate for minority education and employment opportunities during her term in Congress. And whereas Shirley Chisholm was bold in taking a diverse approach as a politician, Chisholm stood firm in what she believed in. As a gifted leader, she brought awareness by being a purposeful voice, which extended to the black community. And whereas, in order to increase awareness about Shirley Chisholm and her connection to Palm Coast during her retirement years, several Palm Coast organizations, businesses, and students built a website at www.shirleychisholm.life and are running an awareness campaign using the social media hashtag I know now. Now therefore be it proclaimed by Mayor Nenz and the City Council of the City of Palm Coast that November 30th, 2015 be Shirley Chisholm Day as a day to remember Shirley Chisholm and reflect upon all of her accomplishments in life and contributions to our nation. Signed the 17th day of November, 2015, City of Palm Coast, John Nenz, Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor Nenz, council members, and citizens of Palm Coast. I would like to say that Shirley Chisholm ran for the presidential candidate excuse me for a moment. It's a little nerve-wracking being up here.
Tell us about it.
As I was saying, Shirley Chisholm was the first black congresswoman and the first black female to run for the president of the United States. She was and is part of the heritage of Palm Coast because she retired right here in Palm Coast. Two businesses, Natural Nubian and Office Divi, worked together to create an awareness campaign and a website, shirleychisholm.life, not .com, created by students like me, Kadron Abbott, Monica Lau, and a few other students that were behind the scenes working on this. So I would like to ask all of you to please visit the website shirleychisholm.life and add your hashtag, I know now. And with that being said, I would like to bring up Orjanette Bryant from Natural Nubian.
Greetings, and thank you, Mayor Nets and Council, for allowing us to be here today. I just want to say this educational awareness campaign has made a difference. We have reached over 350,000 people, and it has gone to the White House, by the way. And as of November the 24th, Ms. Shirley Chisholm will be, she will receive an award for the Presidential Honor Freedom Award. Sorry. she will be receiving that Freedom Award, Presidential Freedom Award. I do want her pastor is here, and her actual only known relative here in Palm Coast, Ms. Maria Bosley, is here, and I want her to come up real quick.
Good morning, Mayor Metz, other city council members, dignitaries, and distinguished guests. The hour has come in America, starting here in Palm Coast, Florida, where all of us in this room have witnessed the first march towards making November 30th a day of recognition and honor of a great woman who dared to be different, who had the courage of her conviction, who set the precedent for all women in politics, not just for African American women, by becoming the first black woman to become elected to United States House of Representatives in 1968. She became a glass ceiling destroyer for all of women of today who seek high government office when she declared her candidacy for the Democratic Party nomination for President of the United States in 1972. The Honorable Shirley Chisholm was truly a dedicated American of courage, honor, and dignity, whose outstanding lifetime achievements will remain forever in the annals of our history. It is with great honor I accept this proclamation on behalf of my godmother. To Kendron, Trenton, Monica, and all the interns and staff at Office DV, Kai and Lisa, the National Nubian Board and Visionary Proclamation, Originette Bryant, I want to thank each of you for helping to make this a reality. My family and I are truly grateful. As my godmother would say, continue to aim high and God bless.
Agenda item number 3, presentation of finance awards for 2015. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, I'm very proud to announce this one. Cindy, are you going to actually handle this? At the end of this, I'd also like to make a few closing comments about this award. It's very, very exciting. So, Cindy, if you'll take it from here.
All right. I'd like to invite Finance Director Chris Quinn and his staff up to the podium. They're actually holding the award, so we'll do a photo afterward. But for this photo, we'll come down. As a city, we're very proud of our strategic planning process, which takes the goals in the direction of you, the City Council, and puts them into a plan for the operation of the city on a day-to-day basis. Priority-based budgeting requires a direct link between our department spending and that strategic action plan. And we believe the awards that are being presented today show the staff's dedication and the effectiveness of this program to the City Council's goal of providing a high quality of life for our residents here in Palm Coast, while also achieving a high level of fiscal responsibility. So we are going to present four awards today that have been received in recent months. The first is the International City-County Management Association's Certificate of Distinction from the ICMA Center for Performance Analytics. And it's a lot of words, but it ties directly into our performance management system. This is the second year that the ICMA has recognized our performance management process, which aligns our department's spending with the City Council's strategic action plan directly. Departments meet with the city manager every quarter to evaluate our progress, and then those quarterly reports are published on the city's website so that the public can review them. The ICMA certificates are awarded at three levels: achievement, distinction, and excellence. Only 48 local governments in the United States and only 6 Florida cities received the award this year. So it shows that we're truly in a top tier of cities for this process. The second award is the Government Finance Officer Association's Distinguished Budget Presentation Award for the annual budget. For this award, we're rated in 4 categories with 14 mandatory criteria related to the budget document, our financial plan, our operations guide, and our communication to citizens about the budget. This is our 12th consecutive year receiving the budget award, and we're proud to announce that we received more outstanding ratings this year than ever before. The strategic action plan and the annual budget are our planning documents. The comprehensive annual financial report and the popular annual financial report are the reports that show that we followed the plan and stayed within our budget. The third award that we're presenting today is the Government Finance Officers Association Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting for our comprehensive annual financial report. This is the highest form of recognition in the area of governmental accounting and financial reporting. This is our 14th consecutive year to receive the award for our audited financial statements. For the second year in a row, we're also being recognized by the Government Finance Officers Association for outstanding achievement in popular annual financial reporting. 2014 was the first time ever that we prepared the popular annual financial report, which we call the PAFR in-house, and it's designed to give our residents an easy-to-understand overview of the city's financial position. This is a voluntary document. The information is pulled from our comprehensive annual financial report. This is the second year that we're receiving this award, the second year that we've produced the report. We're especially proud of this award since we are not required to do this report, and we do it so that our residents will benefit from it and have the opportunity to understand more easily our financial position. So with that said, they are holding the four awards, and we're going to have them gather here in front of the seal, and we would like to invite the council members down for a photo op. So are you going to speak first? First.
Mr. Landon, do you want to speak now?
Let's do it after the photo op.
Okay, we're going to do the photo op, and then Mr. Landon is going to add his remarks.
Well, you're all coming back. I'd like to just, excuse me, conclude. These four awards are really not very common in our business. As Cindy indicated, some of them, very few cities, local governments, even prepare these type of documents, let alone get awards for them. I think it really highlights the quality of our finance department under Chris's leadership, but I've really seen a lot of the employees blossom and excel in recent years. And as you can tell, some of these are new documents we prepare that are uncommon. And then to immediately start receiving recognition at the national level, I think really highlights how fortunate we are to have a quality finance department. Extremely important function of any organization. And I think today is a great day to recognize really the quality we have in our finance department. Thank you.
Let me just add my words, if I might. I can tell you with some 20-some-odd years of experience in local government, the job that City Council does is not an easy one. But having a professional staff that takes the direction from City Council and makes it happen makes our job a lot easier and makes our city a really great place to live. So to all staff, especially the finance department today, but to all staff, thank you so much. And that brings us to agenda item number 4, an ordinance being the second amended and restated MPD development agreement for the Citation Estates MPD. Mr. Reichman.
Mr. Mayor, Council, this is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, providing for the second amended and restated Master Plan Development, or MPD, development agreement for the Citation Estates Master Plan Development, or MPD, between MM&M Enterprises, LLC, Mywell Corp., and Avalon PC Corp., in the City of Palm Coast, providing for inclusion of a 108-bed assisted living facility use, providing for a decrease of multifamily units from 397 to 359, providing for revised development standards for legislative findings and intent. This ordinance repeals all conflicting ordinances, provides for severability, non-codification, provides for an effective date. Mayor, Council, this is a quasi-judicial matter, so if there have been any ex parte communications, those should be disclosed at this time.
Are there any ex parte communications?
No.
Mr. Landon.
Boy, today is definitely a sign of things in the development world are finally picking up, because what you're going to see today are projects that were actually approved a number of years ago, and then just with the economy going south on us, if you will, they disappeared. They went dark. Well, they're coming back to life, and as they come back to life, trying to make sure they are consistent with today's standards and today's market and needs here in Palm Coast. So this is the first of a few of them today, and Angie is going to start off with a presentation on this project.
Thank you, Mr. Landon. Good morning, Mayor Nettes, members of the City Council, Mr. Landon and Mr. Reichman. This morning I'm presenting to you application 2751, which is a proposed amendment to the Master Plan Development Agreement for the Citation Estates Master Plan Development. The subject parcel is a 125-acre overall property. It is zoned master plan development, and it's located at the northeast corner of Citation and Belterre Boulevard. The property was previously rezoned to Planned Unit Development, or PUD, which is now known as MPD, in 2005. In 2008, the MPD was amended to add 37 multifamily units, and at that time, there were approximately 28 acres of wetlands that were identified that would be preserved. As you can see from the official zoning map and flume map, the future land use map category for the Citation Estates MPD is mixed use, and the surrounding future land use map categories include residential, green belt, additional mixed use property, as well as institutional. The zoning of the subject property is master plan development, and the surrounding zonings include commercial 2, duplex, single family residential 2 and 3, public semi-public, and estate 1. As was mentioned, the property was zoned previously to master plan development, and in the last approval of the master plan development concept plan, that plan included 397 multifamily units, 86 single family units, 135,000 square feet of commercial space, an 11.35 acre city park tract, and provided for wetland preservation and conservation areas. The proposed MPD conceptual master plan, which has been revised just a little bit, is largely the same, except that it deletes 38 fewer multifamily units, which would have been located in the area circled at the bottom of the map in red, and it would add a 108-bed ALF. Additionally, there would still be a city park tract located in the northwest corner of the overall property at 12.13 acres, and the project still provides for 86 single-family units, 135,000 square feet of commercial, and continues to preserve wetlands. The conceptual park plan that was submitted with the zoning amendment includes the 12.13-acre city park tract, and the applicant has indicated that this tract of land will include public parking, an event lawn, a multi-purpose field, play area, a park monument, boardwalk, and public restrooms, and the tract of land would be conveyed to the city after the developer improves it. Staff has evaluated the application for the proposed amendment as per the criteria in Land Development Code Section 2.0505 and 2.0603, which sets the criteria for the proposed amendment. And staff finds that the proposed changes are not in conflict with the public interest. These proposed changes are consistent with the comprehensive plan goal to provide housing variety in that it adds the 108-bed ALF, so there's additional housing opportunity. The developer is to build the infrastructure, therefore there will be no financial hardship for the city. The proposed amendment does not create a public hazard or nuisance. All future development of the property must comply with all agency regulations, which will be reviewed at the time of plat or site plan review. Additionally, the plan minimizes environmental impacts as it seeks to preserve valuable resources, i.e. the wetland acreage. This property proposes a mixed-use master plan development, which should generate positive future economic impact in that there will be a mixture of both housing opportunities and commercial development within the MPD. And the applicant submitted a traffic or trip generation comparison to demonstrate that basically substituting the 108-bed ALF for the 38 multifamily units would actually create a slight decrease in PM peak hour trips, and the applicant would be committed to maintaining the level of service standards for other types of public facilities. With that being said, staff finds overall that application 2751 complies with the requirements of the Comprehensive Plan and the Land Development Code, meeting the criteria to amend the MPD, and therefore staff and the Planning and Land Development Regulation Board recommend that City Council approve the amended Master Plan Development Agreement for the Citation Estates MPD, application 2751. That concludes staff's presentation, and I believe the applicant's representative is also here to answer questions.
Council questions. Mr. McGuire.
Can you elaborate on the economic development enhancement that you pointed out as one of the reasons that this is a good thing? What kind of economic development are you talking about?
I think we were just, the staff was just saying that the nature of the project is that it is a mixed-use development, and it provides for both commercial and residential opportunity. Adding the assisted living facility will create a greater mixture of uses and would also create healthcare-related jobs that previously the MPD would not have created.
Okay, so the economic development then is envisioned as being in the healthcare field.
An aspect of it would include that, yes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Other council questions?
Yes.
Mr. DeLorenzo.
The reduction in multifamily and the addition of ALF, did it affect the overall density? Is the MPD still within the required density?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And the traffic analysis that was provided, so mm-hmm. can you explain a little bit why there's such a large difference between multifamily and an assisted living facility?
The applicant provided a basic comparison. They just basically ran trip generation, and the trip generation for beds in an ALF just happens to be much lower than that generated by the multifamily development. So when you take out the 30 units of multifamily, the trips that would have generated was a higher number, and the trips that were generated by the 108-bed ALF turns out to be lower. So
less than the 30.
Just slightly
units.
Less.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Other council questions? Seeing none, we'll open the meeting from the public. Any from the public wish to be heard on this agenda item, come up to the podium, give us your name, limit your contribution to 3 minutes.
Good morning, council. My name is the developer.
Welcome, neighbors, I guess is appropriate. Thank you for being here. This has been going on for about a year. I appreciate staff's patience. There was a lot to clean up. As you know, that this was a project originally approved in 2005, so we're now 11 years after, and we anticipate taking it to the next step later this year. But again, I think staff covered everything that is important in this application, and we can answer any specific questions that you may have of the developer. Okay. Thank you.
Any specific questions for the applicant? Next speaker. Next speaker.
Good morning. I'm Lori Kinnan. I live in the double L section, and I was just wondering if the proposed layout of what's going to be developed on the property is available someplace so we can review it to see what's quite possibly going to be built behind us. Thank you.
Thank you. We got an answer to your question. Next speaker. Next speaker. Seeing no one approach the podium, I close the public portion meeting. Back to council. But first, can we provide whatever conceptual plans, site plans, so on and so forth?
Yes, sir. There is a conceptual master plan that is attached to the rezoning to the zoning amendment, and
it's
a public record. They can contact the planning department, and we'll be more than happy if they'll provide their email address or come in and see us. We'll be happy to provide them with a copy of the plan.
Why don't you make? She's right here, so let's make contact with her right today and show her here while it's convenient.
Not a problem.
Council, additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move approval of agenda item number 4, an ordinance second amending and restating the MPD development agreement for the Citation Estates MPD.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Councilmember Nobile?
Yes.
Mayor Nets?
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passes 4-0.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 5, an ordinance rezoning block 140, lots 19 through 35. Block 141, lots 2 through 19, and the right-of-way of Layton Lane of Palm Coast Park at Palm Coast, map of Lakeview, Section 37, plat from MFR1 to SFR2. Mr. Reichel.
Yes, Mayor. Council, again, this is a quasi-judicial matter. This is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, order providing for the amendment of the official zoning map as established in Section 2.06 of the City of Palm Coast Unified Land Development Code. This ordinance amends the official zoning map for a portion of Palm Coast Park at Palm Coast, map of Lakeview, Section 37, Block 140, lots 19 through 35, and Block 141, lots 2 through 19, and the right-of-way of Layton Lane, as recorded in Map Book 13, page 21 of the Public Records of Flagler County, Florida, containing 10.73 more or less acres from multifamily residential 1, or MFR1, to single-family residential 2, or SFR2, zoning district, providing for conflicts, severability, non-codification, and an effective date. And if there have been any ex parte communications.
Are there any ex parte communications to be disclosed?
None.
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 Mr. Landon.
Those of you that might recall, the last time this property was being proposed, it was proposed for an apartment complex under the multifamily zoning district. And this room would be totally full if we had that same project, because this neighborhood came unglued, to say the least, and we had a number of conversations about that. Well, the new property owner obviously is listening to the neighborhood and is proposing single-family lots versus the multifamily, and is going through the steps to change it to single-family. So once again, Angie will talk about the details.
And again, good morning, Mayor Nitz, members of the council, Angela Piltaver for the Community Development Department. I'm presenting to you application number 2940, which is a proposed rezoning from multifamily residential 1 to single family residential 2 of the Layton Lane parcels.
Yeah, I've changed your name to Angie today. You noticed that. I apologize.
Yes, sir. That's okay. Yeah. I go by that. With that being said, the Layton Lane parcels collectively are a 10.73 more or less acre vacant site located north of Matanzas Woods Parkway and west of Lakeview Boulevard, and the overall property lies between the east and west extents of Lydell Drive. Layton Lane is an unconstructed right-of-way, so we're sort of identifying it by the nearest landmarks. The property is currently zoned MFR1, which that zoning was applied with the adoption of the 2005 citywide zoning map. The original properties have an underlying plat handled by ITT, and that plat provided for 35 lots. As per the information that was submitted with the previous application to create a 50-unit townhome community, there is a wetland on the east end of the property. As mentioned, the existing zoning of the subject parcels is multifamily residential 1, and the surrounding zoning districts include single-family residential 2 and single-family residential 3. The proposed zoning is, of course, single-family residential 2, and the existing zonings would of the surrounding parcels would remain the same, single-family residential 2 and 3. The future land use map category for the overall parcels is the residential flume designation, shown in yellow on the map. The adjacent future land use map designations include the yellow area, which is residential, and green belt, shown in green on the map. In evaluating the application, one of the things that staff would look at is to ensure that there is compliance of the zoning district to the future land use map category. And in this case, single family residential 2 as the proposed district is compliant with its comprehensive plan future land use map category of residential. As Mr. Landon mentioned, there was a previous site plan that was submitted. The project at that time was known as Sawgrass Villas. The property owner proposed a 50-townhome unit community. The property would have had on-site stormwater management. The owner also had, was proposing to preserve approximately 2.5 acres of wetlands that are located on the east side of the overall property. And the site plan would have included only one access point from the west side of Lydell Drive. Staff reviewed the application for compliance with Land Development Code Sections 2.0505 and 2.0603, and staff's findings include that the proposed rezoning would serve the public interest by protecting the neighborhood character, which is largely single-family residential in nature. The proposed rezoning is consistent with comprehensive plan policies and the residential flume. Any infrastructure construction will be handled by the developer, and therefore that would create no financial hardship for the city. Future development of the property as a single-family residential neighborhood would lead to the logical development of this property, basically in as a congruent development to its surroundings, and would have to be handled in compliance with all current agency codes and regulations. If any environmental impacts are proposed with any future plats, those would have to be addressed through the Land Development Code requirements. The future economic impact of the project is expected to be positive in that it will generate jobs in the construction industry for construction of new residential homes. And the proposed change to the use from multifamily to single-family residential actually decreases the maximum density that is achievable on this property and therefore creates no additional impacts on level of service. With that being said, staff finds overall that application 2940 complies with the requirements of the Comprehensive Plan and the Land Development Code and further achieves the following. It reduces maximum density from 8 units per acre to 5 units per acre with a yield of no more than 4 units per acre due to infrastructure needs, i.e. they have to construct a road and they have to provide on-site stormwater management, so that will cut down on the overall density. It reduces the maximum building height from 50 feet to 35 feet, which is similar to the surroundings. And it will create an arrangement of lots in a format that is more similar to the adjacent properties. Finally, with that said, staff and the Planning and Land Development Regulation Board recommend that City Council approve application 2940, rezoning the Layton Lane parcels from multifamily residential 1 to single family residential 2. That concludes the staff presentation, and I believe the applicant is here with their own presentation.
Can I click through here, or do I need...
I'm going to pull it up for you, Ryan.
Okay. Hello. My name is Ryan Blade. I'm with Conley Wicker. We're the consultants for the developer. First, I want to thank staff for their assistance through the process, and I don't want to muddy the waters too much, as Angie or Angela said. We're down zoning from multifamily to single family. This is the piece of property here. It's, she said, Layton Lane, the two connections through to Lydell Drive. It was originally platted by ITT as 35 single family lots. It matched the criteria for single family lots back in the 70s, so those lots don't necessarily meet today's criteria in terms of there's no stormwater. There's no, the right-of-way isn't necessarily wide enough to have closed drainage, things like that. So, and then when it was rezoned in late 90s, early 2000s, when the city was incorporated into city zoning from county zoning, it came in as multifamily, so those platted lots don't even comply with the zoning. So for us to build single-family, we have to rezone. So today all we're looking at is the rezoning. I do have a concept plan in here, but we understand that we're not quite there yet. So again, this is the existing zoning is multifamily. Minimum lot width for multifamily is 25 feet. Everything else around there is at least 60. 8 units per acre. Oh, 8 units per acre. Minimum living area is 650 square feet, which is like a small apartment. Max height of 50 feet. Nothing out there is higher than 2 stories. We want to zone it to single family 2, which gives you a minimum lot width of 60 feet. 5 units per acre. Geometrically, we're only going to get around 35, 37 units. Again, that's because of the need for stormwater. Our minimum living area now per code is 1,200 square feet. The developer doesn't want to do anything under 1,800 square feet, so we'll be much bigger than the 650 that was allowed previously. Max building height of 35 feet, one story, maybe some two-story single-family homes, but they want to mostly do one story. And currently, we're only going to propose single-family homes. There's a few other things that are allowed in this zoning, but we're not going to go there. This is a quick concept that we did, again, to kind of illustrate what I mean by geometrically, we're not going to get 5 units per acre. We're going to end up with, this is about 37 with stormwater. We'll have to see if the stormwater is big enough. We understand where the stormwater is shown, there's a pond, an existing wetland. We understand that we have to go through the city process to get rid of that wetland or to impact that wetland or to mitigate for that wetland. We're not there yet. We need to get the zoning first. These are some concepts that the developer has established or created for what they want the houses to look like. You can see on the top the front elevation. The right-hand side is actually the garage. It will be a side entry garage. So the house from the front, you can't see the garage doors. Garage is to the side. So, and sometimes in subdivisions, you get garage door, little front door, garage door, little front door. They don't want it to look like that. They want it to have this good look. And again, this is a floor plan. You can see the garage door is on the is on the kind of right in the middle of the screen is the garage door, and so your car would have to come in and make a 90-degree turn to get into the garage door. And these will be about 1,800 square foot homes. The developer does not want to sell this to a home builder. He's going to put in the infrastructure and sell houses as he sells lots, have buyers, and have, you know, I guess, semi-custom homes go in there to meet the zoning requirements of the 60-foot lot width and the minimum 1,200 square feet. So, again, we're just downzoning everything that was kind of shown in there is conceptual. We understand that there's much more to the process once we get their zoning, but this is the first step.
Yep. Council questions for the applicant?
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. DeLorenzo.
I actually just have a comment for you. The way you put together the neighborhood meeting paperwork in here with the signatures, the purpose, and then the discussion points was very helpful. We get that information generally, but how you put it together, or how your team put it together, was very helpful.
So. Okay. Thank you.
I have a question, a comment, a question. I'm very pleased to see that this proposal has two access points, or an ingress and an egress. That is essential. But I'm curious how you facilitate that second access point when you're showing that as wetlands.
It's currently wetlands. We're showing just the one access in with the cul-de-sac, and then the property goes all the way through, and there's existing right-of-way there. If we needed to have a second access, we could come in that way. And the wetland, we know it's there. It's around 2 acres based on previous submittals. We understand that that was from 2005, 2007 time frame, so we'll need to get a new biologist out there. We'll need to flag all that. We'll have to go through all the proper channels, the city and St. John's and whoever else has jurisdiction over that wetland before we can mitigate for it. So that was just a concept plan. If the wetland can't go there, we'll have to go back to the drawing board and figure something else out.
Mayor, just clarification. It actually right now is proposed to be a cul-de-sac. And I believe it's no more than 50 units. Right.
That's what my question. We passed an ordinance restricting the number of units you can have in a single ingress.
Right, and it's 50 units, and they will be under that. We have cul-de-sacs all over this community.
That doesn't make him a good thing, in my mind.
Okay, but as long as he stays under 50 units, he would be within our code. And the street now goes through, but it actually is a wetlands, and so there's a lot of challenges if we try to require it to go through.
Yeah, we would keep it under the 50 units so that we could, mainly for that purpose, we understand we have to have stormwater. Where the wetland is most likely going to be the low point of the site. So that's a good spot for ponds, and to have the road come all the way through there might be difficult. But again, if we needed to, we could have an emergency access come through on the other side. But again, we have to have the zoning before we can come in with an application and get that all right.
Additional council questions? Seeing none, we'll open the meeting to the public. And from the public, we should be heard on this agenda item.
Jack Kyle, Palm Coast. Is this going to be a small lot? Because you're saying it's 60 feet. I don't know, you know what the city calls for, but isn't that kind of small for a house now? And then the smaller it is, the more you can put on it. So isn't that what the reason is for making a smaller lot? So you'd have more residents, and you get more residents, you have more water, and more water, you get less for people, and eventually we're going to have nothing. So I'm just wondering about the lot size.
Thank you. We'll get an answer. Next speaker. So you don't approach the podium. We'll close the public portion meeting. Go back to council. I'll take a first crack at the question. There are a large number of lots in Palm Coast that are 60-foot in width now. Once upon a time, a lot of stories start that way, the American dream was a house on a quarter-acre lot with lawn and so on and so on and so forth. Many people find that not the most desirable anymore. Less lawn, less grass to mow, less grass to irrigate. Zero lot lines are becoming very positive. But to the best of my knowledge, this is completely within the city codes. But somebody from staff care to...
Yes, when the applicant submits for a preliminary plat, the property, the minimum lot width for all of the lots will have to meet the minimum standard, which is 60 feet. Obviously, it's their choice. If they choose to make some of the lots larger than that, that's up to them, but that's a site plan or a plat driven issue. The bottom line is for the preliminary plat or final plat to be approved, all of the lot widths have to meet the code minimum standard, which is 60 feet.
And Mayor, I think it's important to point out that for purposes of today's hearing, this is just the rezoning. So there's going to be other public hearings, and there'll be other steps in the process that will ultimately lead to the determination of the size of the lots. Today's just the zoning from multifamily to single family.
Mr. DeLorenzo.
A question for staff, please. Angie.
Yes.
In the staff's portion of the neighborhood meeting, it says that we are going to require a city qualified biologist, and we're going to look at the wetlands. Of course, that's what we do, and we're going to review for threatened and endangered species. Of course, that's what we do as well. But then it says cottonmouth snakes will be monitored by a biologist. Why specifically this species?
Somebody's got it.
I'll answer.
You didn't say it, according to this.
Well, that species of snake was brought up about five times in our meeting. I guess it's currently just overgrown and not maintained by anyone.
Right.
So I guess there's a cottonmouth snake issue there.
Okay.
So
there's a snake terrorizing the neighborhood.
I think it's from the community meeting. It's multiple
okay.
snakes. So
okay.
The question was asked once they start clearing, where will the snakes go? And so it'll be.
That's why we have.
Again, we were just trying to rezone it, so we hadn't gotten down to specific species yet. So we were, but there's methods to construction that you know the migration of the what used to live there.
Okay, I just found it odd that we call that a specific. I mean, we don't.
It was brought up several.
Talking generalizations often, not.
It was brought up several.
A snake.
Yeah,
it
are
was.
You speaking in favor of pygmy rattlers or what?
It was a concern of the community.
So. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Well, if it's a concern of the neighbors, then it's a concern you need to address. I mean, it just makes good sense. Additional counsel.
No, thank you.
Go ahead.
No, I'm done. Thank you.
Additional counsel questions, Mr.
Beal. Has anything been done to that land at all since the city incorporated?
It's been vacant.
Okay, so nobody while they were planning or nothing's been touched. It's just as it was.
All that has happened is a site plan was submitted back in 2010, 2011 for the Sawgrass Villas project.
Other council questions, comments, or a motion?
Move approval of agenda item number 5, an ordinance rezoning block 140, lots 19 through 35, block 141, lots 2 through 19, in the right-of-way of Layton Lane of the Palm Coast Park at Palm Coast, map of Lakeview, section 37, plat, from MFR1 to SFR2.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Councilmember Nobile?
Yes.
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passes 4-0.
Thank you very much. Agenda item number 6, an ordinance proposing a comprehensive plan amendment changing a future land use map designation of a 1.1-acre parcel at the southwest intersection of I-95 and State Road 100, along with a site-specific policy limiting development on the parcel. Mr. Reichman.
Mayor, Council, this is an ordinance of the City Council, City of Palm Coast, Florida, providing for the amendment of the City of Palm Coast 2035 Comprehensive Plan as previously amended. Pursuant to Section 163, Florida, Chapter 163, Florida Statutes, amending the future land use map or FLUM designation for 1.1 more or less acres of certain real property from green belt to mixed use, as described in more detail in the legal description, which is an exhibit to this ordinance, including a note on the future land use map limiting non-residential development on the subject property to 10,500 square feet with no residential development permitted, providing for conflicts, codification, severability, and effective date. Mayor, Council, this is a legislative matter pursuant to Florida law.
Mr. Landon.
This is yet another project that we talked about many years ago and has now come back to life. But Jose is going to handle this presentation.
Good morning, Mayor and members of City Council. Jose Papa for the Community Development Department. As Mr. Landon stated, what we have here is a proposed comprehensive plan amendment with a companion application for a rezoning of the parcel, the same subject parcel. And I will provide one presentation to handle both applications at this time. The subject parcel is located at the southwest corner of I-95 and Moody Boulevard. It is about a 1.1 acre parcel that is part of a larger holdings from that the larger holding from the, of the property owner. The total acreage of the holdings is about 108 acres. Currently, all 108 acres is vacant. And again, the proposed application is for a comprehensive plan amendment and a rezoning for that 1.1 acre parcel only. The comprehensive plan amendment, currently the subject parcel is designated as greenbelt on the future land use map. What the applicant proposes is to change that designation to mixed use. In addition to the change on the map, the applicant is also proposing to limit the potential development just on that subject parcel to 10,500 square feet of non-residential uses, and additionally, no residential development shall be permitted. Typical with any comprehensive plan amendment, we went through a public facilities impact analysis, and based on the net result of that proposed amendment and taking into account the limiting policy that's proposed by the applicant, you have a decrease in development potential, a decrease in the PM peak hour daily trips that might be produced by that development, by that subject parcel, and a decrease in water, sewer, solid waste, and student station demand. Again, we're talking specifically just about the 1.1 acre that is the subject of this application.
Mr. Ask a question.
Mr. DeLorenzo, sure.
Yes, sir. Jose, can you explain, well, Greenbelt has some development rights.
Yes, sir.
But with the limiting policy, it's less rights than would that are allowed under straight zoning?
Yes, sir. Doing a maximum potential development, the Greenbelt maximum potential development is more than what's being proposed because, again, of the, as you mentioned, the site-specific policy.
Okay, thank you.
Your Honor, Jose, what is student station demand?
Basically, the number of students that may be produced. What it is that Greenbelt permits some residential uses, and that's the current land use designation right now.
Number of students that may be produced?
Yes, sir. Right now, if again, we're talking hypothetical maximum yields here, that since Greenbelt permits some type of residential use, a residential use, when we analyze it, will have a student generation demand because it will... Houses have kids. But since...
What a novel concept.
Right. And so the site-specific policy, since it mentions that no residential development may be developed on this subject parcel, then you've eliminated any student demand, and so there is a decrease in that student demand. Student
Thank
station
you.
Demand.
Continue, please.
Yes, sir. Other things that we review when we have a comprehensive plan amendment, we review the environmental factors, and based on the proposed amendment, it avoids the core wetland areas. If you can look at the map and the location of the subject parcel, again, it is located towards the eastern edge of of the parcel. And again, that's closest to I-95 and closer to where your other upland areas are. And so again, you're minimizing, the amendment avoids the core wetland areas, which are more typically found towards the center of the area. Further review of the environmental factors reveals that there's no negative impact on the special flood hazard area. Again, it protects the highest quality wetlands as open space, while again situating the improvements contiguous with the roadways in the degraded wetland and upland areas. The potential development will again be closest to the road, and in this case, the I-95 on-ramp. And review, again, no impact to listed species, potable water, or historical resources on the site. The proposed amendment is consistent with the surrounding land uses. The mixed use is consistent with the uses found to the north of it and consistent with the roadway uses that are found to the east of it. Again, and with that amendment, protecting, again, the core wetland areas that are found towards the center and west of the site. We find that this application is consistent with comprehensive plan policies. It is a location where you have available infrastructure. It is appropriate for commercial development, being at the the intersection of two major arterials in the city, I-95 and State Road 100. It's consistent with policies that promotes land use patterns that do not increase the cost of providing utilities. Again, utilities are available adjacent to the site. And again, helping to improve the balance of land uses in the city. We have some additional commercial areas here that may be developed consistent with comprehensive plan policies. So our findings, there is no impact on level of service for public service and infrastructure. There is no significant impact on environmental factors. It is consistent with the surrounding land uses and consistent with the comprehensive plan. As I mentioned, there is a companion zoning map amendment to the future land use map amendment application.
For the public, that would be agenda item number 7. Is that correct?
Yes. And here, the same subject parcel, which is currently zoned agriculture, is proposed to be changed to high-intensity commercial, which is again going to be consistent with the holdings that the landowner has that front on State Road 100. It's about 9 acres fronting State Road 100 right now. And again, this 1.1 acre will just bring that total area that may be developed for commercial uses to about a little over 10 acres. Reviewing any zoning map amendment with our criteria in the land development code, again, we find it to be consistent with the criteria in our land development code. It is consistent with a comprehensive plan. It is a permitted zoning district in the proposed flume designation. Again, it is compatible with the surrounding land uses. Our findings, again, is that the public infrastructure capacity is available to serve development at this site. And the change promotes development into a more appropriate area, into more appropriate areas of the site. Again, those areas that are closest to the roadways. The change is appropriate. It's a land use along a developing commercial corridor of State Road 100. And again, promotes for the balance of residential and commercial uses in the city. The Planning and Land Development Regulation Board did hear both of these items at their October public hearing. And based on those public hearings, staff and the Planning and Land Development Regulation Board recommend to the City Council that they approve first the proposed flume amendment from greenbelt to mixed use, along with a site-specific policy limiting development within the amendment area. Second recommendation is that staff and the PLDRB recommend again to City Council that they approve the proposed zoning map amendment from agriculture to high-intensity commercial for the subject 1.1 acre parcel. Next steps, if City Council approves these items at today's hearing, we will schedule for a second public hearing. And beyond that, If the flume amendment and the zoning map amendment are adopted, the property owner will still have to go through the subdivision master plan, preliminary plat, final plat, and site plan. So we're sort of at the beginning of a long process here. And staff will entertain questions at
Council
this time.
Questions.
I'm sorry, Mayor. The applicant is here for a presentation.
Any questions for staff or for the applicant?
I have a question.
Mr. DiLorenzo.
Approximate distance from the parcel to residential development?
Yes, I did look at that. It's about 750 to 800 feet in any direction.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you.
I have a quick question. Mr. Nabil, go ahead.
What is gained? What can be done going from the current to this? I mean, I know what we're proposing is it's full outlook will reduce an impact, but what can be done with the new change that couldn't be done?
What the change allows is that it allows for the footprint of development to avoid more sensitive wetlands. So by allowing them to maybe impact wetlands or land that is closer to the on-ramp and into more upland areas, you're avoiding areas to the west of the developable area that are more sensitive in nature. I think maybe the applicant will highlight that in one of his slides.
I'll wait then.
Are you prepared? Go ahead.
Yes. Thank you, Jose, for the slide. Mr. Mayor, council members, thank you for this opportunity. I'm Tony Robbins of Prosser, our senior planner there at 13901 Sutton Park Drive, south in Jacksonville. And to the council members' question, before you on the monitors there lie the subject properties that you saw in the earlier staff report. But if I could direct your attention to the image on the far right, the subject property is outlined in red. This is the amendment area. And as Mr. Papa correctly alluded to, just a conceptual plan of some hotel and restaurant on that site, the ability to shift it over to the easternmost extent of it and avoid the sensitive wetland areas. If you compare the image on the extreme left to the image on the extreme right, you'll notice the entire parcel that is already mixed use is not to be developed upon. So we're compact development, we're avoiding the sensitive areas, and what this 1.1 acre addition does is allow the site to be developed with a better flow of traffic, and we're not cramming 10 pounds of sugar into a 5-pound bag. We would like to see non-residential development in the right location. Completely agree with the staff report that's been presented to you as it relates to the compatibility and consistency with your comprehensive plan. But I thought this illustration may kind of hammer home, well, why are we doing one little acre? And simply because, and to put it succinctly, Mr. Mayor, it's just the layout is a lot more easily obtained and safely achieved with a little more breathing room. And it is a first for me as well that a comp plan amendment to mixed use from agriculture or greenbelt has less impact. It's a nice positive.
For staff, what prevents this from being the camel's nose in the tent and we start to see commercial creep into greenbelt?
It's called the Corps of Engineers.
Yes.
Probably is the quick answer is that the regulatory agencies will not allow the rest of it to be developed. But Denise, maybe can address that a little bit.
Sure. Mr. Landon's reference is correct. This project and concept has been approached to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the St. John's River Water Management District and actually escalated all the way up to the U.S. EPA Environmental Protection Agency. And as part of those conversations to arrive at this point of avoidance and minimization of those core areas, there has been a commitment put forward by the applicant to those agencies and to the City of Palm Coast to preserve the remaining area, which is about 89% of the parent area of 108 acres. So by conservation easement, it'll be preserving forever.
That's what I wanted to hear. Thank you. Staff questions for the applicant?
Thank you.
Seeing none, we'll open the meetings to the public. Any from the public wish to be heard on this agenda item? Actually, there's two related agenda items. You can speak on either or both, but we will deal with them separately. Anyone wish to be heard? Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting. Come back to council. Are there any additional questions, comments, or a motion on agenda item number 6?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Councilmember DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Councilmember Nobile?
Yes.
Council Mayor Nets?
Yes.
This motion passes 4-0.
Almost got demoted. Or promoted, I'm not sure. This brings us to agenda item number 7. We've already seen the presentation on it. Mr. Reichman?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. The title is as follows. As an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, order providing for the amendment of the official zoning map as established in Section 2.06 of the City of Palm Coast Unified Land Development Code, amending the zoning designation for approximately 1.1 acre more or less from agricultural to high-intensity commercial or COM3. Subject property is more particularly depicted and described in Exhibit A. This ordinance provides for severability conflicts and provides for an effective date. This is quasi-judicial.
Quasi-judicial. Any ex parte communications?
None.
Anything additional from staff?
No, sir.
No? Okay. If there are no additional questions, because this is a separate agenda item, I will again open the meeting to the public. And for the public, we should be heard on agenda item number 7. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting and come back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
That's aye.
Roll call vote. What am I doing? That's an ordinance. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Aye. Yes.
Councilmember DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Councilmember Nobile?
Yes.
Mayor Nets?
Yes.
Mayor, this motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. It's interesting to echo the comments the city manager made earlier. We're seeing a trend now. The economy is recovering. Palm Coast is recovering. And I think that's a good thing for all of us, especially the taxpayers. Agenda item number 8, an ordinance, a land development code amendment on standards for accessory structures. Mr. Reichman.
Mayor, Council, this is an ordinance of the City of Palm Coast for amending the City's Unified Land Development Code in Chapter 4, Conditions for Limited Specific Uses and Activities, including Section 4.0101, General Provisions for Accessory Structures, and Section 4.0108, Swimming Pools, providing for severability, for codification, for conflicts, and providing for an effective date. This is a legislative matter, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Landon.
Unlike the other one, this is proposal is to change our actual code. It's not site-specific. We had a couple of cases where existing residents, wanted to add a pool to their house. And because of kind of a little quirk in our code, we could not approve that pool. Ray Tyner, our planning manager, came to me and said he believes these are good projects, and he proposed this amendment to the code to allow for pools on corner lots that currently are not allowed. Mr. Hubert, Bill is going to give you the details.
Good morning, council members and city staff and residents. I'm Bill Hoover with the Planning Department. We've got two homes, and we're going to show you the drawings that were submitted. We're showing the house in each of these in yellow in the pool area, which includes the deck for regarding setbacks, is shown in orange. First home is located on Colorado Drive and Columbia Lane. And the zoning on this is SFR2, which has a 20-foot front setback from Colorado Lane down here at the bottom of the screen, and a 15-foot side street setback off of Columbia Lane. So as proposed, this pool would not be able to be built because it's not behind the building facade, which is right there. And then additionally, right behind the house itself, there's probably about a 12-foot wide screened lanai area. So there's not as much room back there as you can it appears. And the reason the home likely was put in the upper left corner is because there's a canal view right back in here, and so they set the home so they could enjoy the view. So in this case, the setback from Columbia Lane is actually 63 feet, yet staff is unable to approve it in this unique situation. Next slide is on Pilgrim Drive, which is right down here, and it's on the corner of Pillar Lane, which is over here. And zoning in this case is SFR3, which has a 25-foot front setback off of Pilgrim Lane down here to the bottom of the screen. And then it has a 20-foot side street setback, which would be to the left side there.
Oh, you broke it.
And this drawing here is generic in nature, and it shows home A on the left side of your screen that fronts on Y Street. And it basically, zoning in this case is SFR3, which would have a 25-foot front yard setback off of Y Street and a 20-foot side yard setback off the bottom of the screen, which would be X Street. And the key change we're making to the text is shown up there, and I'll read it to you. On corner lots, accessory swimming pools may be located, and their enclosures may be located in front of the side street building facade, which shall meet the front yard setback requirements in lieu of the side street setback. So essentially what staff was thinking in this case, if your own home B here in this case, then let's say you got a vacant lot next to you. So if home A, when they come in for a building application, they could build home A and have it front on X Street or Y Street. If they had it front on X Street to the bottom, they would have a 25-foot front yard setback. So that's the reason we're saying that the swimming pools could extend beyond the face of the house right along here as long as it met the front yard setbacks, which would be an additional 5 feet. So that way it minimizes the impact on home B. Are there any questions on this, since this slide right here probably describes and depicts better to answer any questions you may have? And I could show you the text on the next screen if you want.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. DiLorenzo.
The idea, you have to look at these pictures in conjunction, right? These are adjacent parcels in this description here, right? And the idea here is that the swimming pool would be allowed in front of the face of the building, but not allowed in front of the face of the adjacent house, right? That's why you're matching it with the front setback.
Typically, generally, and occasionally throughout the city, you may have different zoning districts, so the setback's required. But yeah, Let's say in the typical situation, you're exactly right.
Okay. Yep. There are some few times when we have different SFR zoning next to each other, which may affect that.
Right. So the idea was if you're sitting there in next door in the home and you don't really expect anybody building, in this case, closer than 20 feet. So we're sort of like giving a little bonus to the lot next door. If someone does extend beyond that, then it would have to be set back 5 feet further.
Okay.
Mr. McGuire.
Mr. Hoover, I'd like to see in these ordinances the underlying philosophy of why they're there, because whenever we have to deal with a corner lot, it's hard to put them in the same box with other property in any given area. And I'd like to see that if you said this is the goal of this ordinance or this is the goal of this section of the Unified Land Development Code, then you've set the stage for some sort of a review process by the PLRDB or by your offices to see whether or not, from a aesthetic standpoint, recognizing that certain things have to be done in order to preserve the quality of living in the neighborhood, then a variance could be considered. We review these codes, and oftentimes it takes a while for those of us that are not dealing with it every day, like myself, to understand what's the goal here, what are we trying to accomplish with this code. So I'm wondering if language should be part of this that sets the stage for a variance review, and I'd like to hear your opinion, if not Ray Tyner's.
Thank you, sir. Mr. McGuire, Ray Tyner, planning manager. The way this was written in the code, it could not go through a variance process because there wasn't variances in our code are just for dimensional. You know, if you're set back 4 feet and you got 3.5, you can do a variance for dimensional. This specific portion of our code specifically states that that pool has to be in back of the facade of the house. So there was no way that any of those two applicants could have went through a variance process because it wasn't dimensional in nature. In the past, with Palm Coast Community Service Corporation, for many years on these corner lots, because I spoke to Barbara Grossman and showed her this portion of the code and said, you know, way back when with the Palm Coast Community Service Corporation, they would allow these two applicants to move forward. It wasn't until our code was approved in 2008 that we limited these pools on corner lots. So this was kind of recent. We've always used to be able to allow them. In 2008, we didn't. They're so far in between, they don't come up very often with the corner lots. So we felt that making this change would be good. We also went to the planning board, provided they also provided a recommendation for approval. They looked at it both aesthetically and gave their recommendation.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Ray, and I appreciate the efforts that your folks go through to do this. But we have to keep in mind what the goal is of having these codes, and if the goal is not undermined or somehow detracted from in order to have an arrangement like this, if it doesn't blight the neighborhood, if you will, then I think we should look more favorably on it. And all I'm saying, Ray, to go back to my original statement, is we need to know why the code is there. What goal is the code intended to accomplish in order to render an intelligent opinion, as I see it? Thank you.
Additional questions? Seeing no one, over the meeting to the public. Anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 8?
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Council. My name is Mike Rushy. I have a pool company here in Palm Coast by the name of Ohana Waters. I'm representing the owner at 82 Pilgrim Drive. I'd just like to simply say that I'm very blessed that I've grown up here in Palm Coast and that I've had a very successful business for several years and that a lot of people want to come to Palm Coast and they want to go ahead and they want to have a pool in their backyard. Mr. and Mrs. Piero, once again, they have a beautiful home. It's on a very, very large lot. I was somewhat floored when this came about, and I can only say that the homeowners would go ahead and greatly appreciate your consideration. Once again, they do have an existing 6-foot-high PVC or vinyl fencing itself. They plan on doing some extensive landscaping, and I think that it would go ahead and that it would be an improvement to their house and to the overall community and improve the value of the overall community itself. But I do not think that it would be a detriment and or an eyesore to the overall community, and I thank you all for your consideration.
Thank you. Next speaker. Next speaker. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting. Back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
I have a question, Your Honor.
Please.
If the council were to approve the installation of these pools, does this establish a legal precedent for future homeowners?
Well, it's actually much more than that. What you're considering is an amendment to your land development code. And so the individual requests for pools in the future won't come to this council. They'll come to city staff to implement the land development code if you were to pass this proposed ordinance in second reading.
I'd like to piggyback. This isn't about those two specific lots. Those were examples of real live examples that we are considering right now. But you are not approving those
Correct.
Two specific lots. You are approving a change to the code that would allow these pools to be built on those two lots and any other lot, corner lot, that is in the same situation. So do not want you to think that you're actually approving just these two. You're approving a change to the code.
In other words, we're changing policy. And then in the future, if you were to approve this at second reading, the policy of how and what can be built on lots in Palm Coast will be changed. And then when staff then receives applications to build on lots in Palm Coast in the future, they'll apply this new policy. And under the old policy, the two examples that would have been provided, the answer was no. If this policy changes, the answer can be yes. But again, as the city manager indicates, what we're here for this morning is not specific. These were examples only. We're looking at the overall rules.
Mobile.
Does this, like we discussed in the workshop, is this, I'm reading 411, and is this affecting sheds like we talked about?
No.
Okay. So even though it says structures, other, and it's not included in here as an exclude, so to speak.
Right, we received your direction from the workshop, and we exclude, we're not touching sheds. This is just about the pools on corner lots.
Okay, that's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. You know, I just, as a kid growing up in Pagoda, New Jersey, I lived in a corner lot, and I never realized why my parents had to do certain things. And it wasn't until much, 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 much later that I realized that, in a sense, having a corner lot puts further restrictions on you than on your neighbors. So I think what we're doing here is making a reasonable accommodation. There are probably not that many corner lots that want swimming pools that would have this, but I think it's a reasonable accommodation for people who choose to live on a corner lot or who had no choice about living on a corner lot, as I did.
And we could always revisit it, could we not, Your Honor, if we approved this and it proved to be troublesome?
You could. You could. Well, you don't want to get into the equivalent spot zoning, but yes, you could. Additional questions, comments, or a motion on agenda item number 8?
Move approval of agenda number 8, Land Development Code Amendment on Standards for Accessory Structures.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Yes.
Council Member DiLorenzo?
Yes.
Council Member Nobile?
Yes.
Mayor Nets?
Yes.
This motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. Agenda item number 9, a resolution establishing a zoning in progress for bottle clubs. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, a couple weeks ago, I received a phone call from one of our local businesses. And this particular individual owns establishments here in Palm Coast, but also a couple, two or three in Flagler County, in Volusia County. He had a bad experience in Volusia County with bottle clubs, and he'd heard that one of the owners who had actually had their business closed by, I believe it was Daytona Beach or maybe Holly Hills in that area, was looking to locate in the shopping center that his current business is located here in Palm Coast. And he was quite upset and asked if there's anything the city can do to avoid the problems he was seeing down in Volusia County, that Volusia County local government, cities, and the county has taken some action to try to correct. We looked into it. We got actually some other business owners that called us, and we're also concerned in other shopping centers that were receiving inquiries about opening a bottle club. And so we looked into it and got with Commander Carmen with our Flagler County Sheriff's Office And he looked into what was going on in Volusia County, a lot of concern about the activities at bottle clubs. In essence, what a bottle club is, if you don't know, is it is an establishment that is actually defined and is regulated in the state law that allows alcoholic beverage consumption, but not the sale of alcoholic beverages. You have to bring your own bottle. So they provide the mixers and the environment, but they don't have to follow the same rules and regulations as someone with a liquor license. And so it's kind of a loophole, if you will. And those loopholes sometimes have caused problems in our neighbors. So what we have, at the request of a number of businesses, and I know you've all received emails from businesses that have heard that these bottle clubs may be opening here in Palm Coast, started the review process with legal counsel, Mr. Carmen, and to see if there was something we could do to regulate them in Palm Coast. It's a three-step process. This is the first step, and that is just saying that we're starting a legislative review or process, and that in the meantime, no one can apply, because if you don't pass this and someone applies and then you decide to regulate bottle clubs differently than today, they would be grandfathered. And so in Florida, we're able to stop the game of applying right under the wire. And then there's a couple other processes that Ray Tyner will outline. I've asked Mr. Carmen to talk a little bit about the experiences that law enforcement's had in this region with bottle clubs and why we believe they should be regulated. We've confirmed with our attorney that this has not been preempted by the state for local governments to regulate. But we are just in the initial process, so we're not ready to talk about the regulations. We're just saying why we think they should be considered for regulations and then bring those to you in the future, but in the meantime not allow someone to apply ahead of time. So, Mark, if you could kind of discuss law enforcement experience with bottle clubs in our neighboring communities.
Yes, sir. Morning, Mayor, members of council. As Mr. Landon and the resolution stated, the Sheriff's Office, City of Palm Coast, has a serious concern regarding these bottle clubs. And before we get started, I want to make it clear, as your law enforcement representative, we are in no way against business. We are all for business job opportunities in Palm Coast and the surrounding areas, but this isn't the kind of establishment we want in Palm Coast. I know you guys got a lot of letters and emails, but I've been out in the community, and I've also been in touch with a lot of the business owners, and they are vehemently against this kind of a establishment coming into our city. Law enforcement has a long history with this type of establishment, especially Volusia County, who I spoke with. And these businesses, establishments, they're really taxing on law enforcement. They stretch our resources beyond the limit with manpower issues. So what I did, and to give you some examples, I got a 17-page report from Volusia County. And I want you to keep in mind, Volusia County is four times our size. And if I can, or may I give you a brief example, a summary of some of the calls for services that Volusia County handled with them, or law enforcement in Volusia County being Daytona Beach and Holly Hill. And this is in less than a two-year time frame from January of 2013 to November of this year. And with that, a brief summary would be law enforcement in Volusia County responded to 453 calls for service to the Bottle Club on Nova Road in Volusia County. 44 were fights or disturbance related, 6 involving some type of weapons or use of weapons. This does not include the a complaint of a robbery and assault and battery because their CAD system entries are different. It comes in a different system the way it's entered. So on a more serious note, this club also had 2 homicide-related incidents. One happened in 2013 right on the parking lot where someone was shot and killed. And one more recently of May of this year where a fight stemmed from Poppy's Bottle Club in 1376 Nova Road, where after the fight escalated, they actually drove in two cars and went into the city limits of Daytona Beach on Oak Ridge Bridge, and the two parties involved were actually shooting at each other on the bridge in the early morning hours. Not only was someone killed in one of the cars, but this was the time of the morning when morning commuters were already on their way to work, jeopardizing the innocent citizens and commuters. So a lot of assaults, a lot of complaints. One more call that I'd like to mention was it took a lot of resources for extra patrols. So Volusia County, Daytona, Holly Hill, we had two deputies that would just happen to be sitting nearby, and they actually heard gunshots going off. And this was in March of this year. Before they can even come over to radio call, they started heading towards that way. Radio call came out. Luckily, no one was injured on that call. But that's three incidents where guns were used or shot at that club. All of these calls that we're talking about is not mentioning the miscellaneous calls for quality of life calls for service, parking issues, noise complaints, not to mention the garbage that's left behind, the bottles, the vandalism, and the elements that it brings in. So pretty much that's it. What we're asking for is some help in keeping community safe and keeping these establishments out of Palm Coast and the surrounding areas. So we're just asking you to go ahead and approve this resolution. And that's about it, Mr. Lannon.
Thank you. Any other questions, Mr. Mayor?
Council questions. Mr. Nobile.
Mark, are these issues related to the fact that they're open after hours, or the fact that they serve, or the fact that there's alcohol involved?
Councilman Nobile, this, in my opinion, this is a way, as Mr. Lannon said, this is just a way of getting out of a liquor license. These are after-hour clubs where pretty much 2 o'clock, they were open to 5. There was really no, they're governed by DBPR rather than having a liquor license, and they're not really monitored. The sheriff down in Volusia County finally had enough, and they were out till 5, 6 in the morning. My opinion, do we need to have all these bars that are closed at 2 o'clock in the morning then go over to a bottle club and stay open till 5 o'clock when people have been drinking?
Right. So the issue here is the fact that there's the loophole that gets them to go beyond 2 a.m.
They go beyond 2 a.m. Yeah, they can go on.
It's hard to govern. Yes, they
can go beyond 2 a.m. I've talked to a lot of deputies, a lot of we have some that worked here that worked in Holly Hill and all. And, yeah, most of these calls, if you look at this report, most of these calls will come in after 2 a.m.
Okay. So – and I have a question. I was just reading our ordinances, and one, I mean, it says, and I don't know, but our ordinance on alcohol on commercial that serves out or has alcohol license or is alcohol driven, it, you can't sell, serve, or consume alcohol after 2 a.m.
Yes.
So that's not effective in this case?
We actually changed that recently and kept them out of neighborhood areas and also included bottle clubs in the requirement that they can't consume alcohol after 2 a.m. And so we think we've helped the situation.
Right.
But what our neighbors are finding out is that there are the enforcement, the culture that these establishments try to bring to the shopping centers is still a gathering place, and a gathering place that usually causes conflicts that was talked about. Once again, we're not here to suggest exactly what the regulations will be. We're here to say that we don't believe that our regulations maybe are as strong as they should be based on what we're hearing, and that we need to go through this process. And in the meantime, not allow them to open until you do have the opportunity to go through the process.
Your Honor?
Mr. McGuire.
I have two questions. Mark, are there any bottle clubs anywhere in Flagler County? Does Beverly Beach or Bunnell or?
No, sir. And I think Mayor's point and Mr. Lennon's point is we don't want them in Palm Coast, but it wouldn't be good to have them in the surrounding areas either.
If I may comment on that point, anticipating this agenda item, I communicated with the mayors of the other municipalities in Flagler County, advising them that we might take action on this. And as was the case when we were contemplating adult entertainment, our goal is to protect Palm Coast, but not simply to displace something into someone else's community. So I've advised the other mayors that they may want to pay attention, consider this also. So,
and my second question, Your Honor, is directed at Mr. Reichman. What is a zoning in progress? What is the nature and mechanics of it?
I'm going to follow up on something that was stated by Mr. Landon in the introduction to this agenda item. This is the first step in a three-step process. And under Florida law, at this point, as you can see from the resolution, given the information that came to staff and came to you and came to the city, there was concern about the strength of the city's current regulations as they would currently apply to an application for this type of use in whatever zoning district that they applied to. And in order for staff to be able to tell such an applicant that, no, you cannot open in wherever it is that they apply to open, there is a requirement under current Florida law that staff receives direction from the legislative body, in this case the city council, in some formal way. In this way that you have before you today is in the form of a resolution that there is legislation in progress. And as you can see from this resolution and from the agenda item, what that means is that there is going to be brought before, which is already prepared, a moratorium for 120 days. And that legislation is going to go before your PLDRB, I believe, in December.
Tomorrow.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I misspoke. I didn't realize it was tomorrow. Tomorrow. And that will create an opportunity. That moratorium, which is step two, will create an opportunity for the staff to obtain the necessary input to prepare the appropriate changes, if necessary and as necessary, to the Land Development Code. So in order for the staff to legally be able to respond to an application between now and that point in the future to say, no, you can't open your bottle club in this location, this step is necessary that we're doing right now.
So a zoning in progress means that we're putting a hold on it pending legislation.
We're saying that until we get done with this three-step process, you don't have what you think you would have, which would be the rights under our current code, because we're in the process of changing that code.
Okay.
And the Florida courts have recognized that as a legal way to protect public safety, protect the rights of the public, while local governments are in the process of adapting to and trying to conform with changes that are confronting them.
I would hope that any zoning restrictions like this would have language that is specific enough so that you couldn't have a rose by any other color, because if you change the language, you have the same thing, but now you call it something different.
And that's something that obviously will definitely be considered by staff and ultimately by the PLDRB and by this council when during the course of the adoption of the consideration of the changes to our land development code. And the key for uses, for regulating uses like adult entertainment or internet cafes or things that we have faced before, is in your definitions. So important to adequately prepare and anticipate how these establishments can operate so that you define them appropriately and any other ways that they may operate.
Thank you.
Commander, I have a couple questions for you. An establishment that sells liquor, you and I call them a bar. Can a convicted felon get a liquor license to run a bar?
No, sir.
Can a convicted felon get a license to... Do you need a license to have a bottle club, and can a convicted felon own one?
Under Florida law, because of the change in Florida law, the state of Florida does require a license for a bottle club.
Okay. In a bar, does the purveyor of the spirits, does the bartender have a legal or moral obligation to monitor the drinking of the patrons and to cut them off if necessary?
In theory.
In theory. In theory, does the owner of a bottle club have the same obligation?
He's not. They're not under the same guidelines.
Because they're not selling the product.
No,
they're not serving the product.
They're selling you
they're
the ice
and They're serving the ginger ale that you mix it with, or the ice cubes. Okay. Yeah. Last question. I go to a bottle club, and I take a bottle with me. And whether they close at 2 a.m. or 5 a.m. or 8 p.m. or whatever, I may or may not finish that entire bottle. What do I do with the bottle when the club closes? I take it home with me.
And now you're in violation of an open container law.
So I have three options, I suppose. I could finish the whole bottle while I'm there, which would probably not be healthy or desirable. I could, when the club closes, take my bottle out into the parking lot and continue to consume. Or I could put it in my car and drive home with it, which is a violation of the law. Okay.
Pretty much what we've seen with experience is they are not going to drive home. They're going to stay in the parking lot. They're not the most, I'll be honest, they're not the most law-abiding citizens. They're not going to close it. They tend to hang out there, stay there until law enforcement comes and intercedes. And it's the kind of element it just brings, to be honest with you.
It seems to me that under the current Florida legislation, there are so many loopholes, if you will, so many opportunities to behave in a less than an appropriate fashion. We need to put a hold on this until we can establish appropriate regulations to prevent the kind of things that I'm suggesting might happen.
And, Mr. Mayor, again, we're getting ahead of this discussion entails a lot of speculation because we're not exactly sure. But it's not just that these operations or how these operations would operate, but also where they may operate. Is there an appropriate part of the city where these may be
All of that
open?
Will be determined
Correct.
At some point
Correct.
In the legislative process. Okay.
Mayor, I'd also like to follow up. We've already heard from Flagler Beach, and they've already eliminated bottle clubs from their zoning code. They don't allow them in their city already. Okay. So they've already taken action on this issue. Just okay. Follow up.
Additional council questions? If not, we'll open the meeting to the public. Any from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 9?
Get them, Jack.
Jack Calvin, Coast. I just want to answer your question on what they do with the bottle. The bottle clubs that I ran into in my lifetime, you go there with your bottle, and then when you're finished, you leave the bottle there, and they put your name on it, and they mark it. And then when you go back, the bottle is there, and you take your bottle from wherever they put it, and then they send you the condiments that they go into it. So you don't carry the bottle. You just carry it in. And then when it's empty, you carry it out. So all your drinking is under the place, and the bottle stays there until it's empty. I just wanted to let you know what my experiences were.
To answer Mr. Carroll's question, that is the proper way to do it. That, from talking with deputies and officers down in Volusia, that's not what happens.
Yes, Vincent Liguori, Palm Coast. Is there any way, Council, that you can regress this whole situation back to the state legislature and say, hey, something's got to be done here? Either they have to be classified as a liquor store and have to go through the licensing product or something of that nature. Is there regress on that matter?
Good question. We'll get an answer. Or we'll try to get an answer.
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast.
I think when it comes down to it, it's zoning. It's a very difficult thing to say, just leave the bottle, because sometimes you pass the bottle, and you pass the bottle, and you pass the bottle, and, you know, on. But I think it's worthwhile not only discussing, but finding out whether the legislature will do something to rectify this, and if they can't, we need to get on it fast, because we do not have enough law enforcement to enforce this. I'll tell you that right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. Next speaker. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting. Come back to council. To Mr. Liguori's point, I will certainly speak to our legislative delegation, tell them what we are contemplating and the three-step process that we are undertaking, and share with them our concerns. The issue as to whether or not Tallahassee could or would take this up in a sufficiently timely manner to solve our problem, I'm not willing to take that chance.
But under the elements of home rule, we don't need them to, do we?
No.
They preempt a lot of things. They haven't preempted this yet that I'm aware of.
No. In fact, our office contacted the state specifically on the issue, and were advised by the attorney for the state, the department in the state that regulates bottle clubs, and they advise that our ability to protect our citizens in this manner is legal. They when they receive an application for a bottle club, we were told they specifically will require the applicant for that license for a bottle club with the state of Florida to indicate that they have zoning approval, that they have the necessary zoning approval from the local government, the local entity in which they are intended to open their bottle club.
Okay. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
I move that we approve the resolution establishing a zoning in process for bottle clubs.
Second.
Moved and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number 10, resolution of a contract with AWA Contracting Company, Inc. for Boulder Rock Drive Crossing Rehabilitation Project. Mr. Landon.
We're finally beyond land use issues. As we change the guard, this is a major stormwater project that we are proposing. It's quite unique in the fact that Mayor, as we talked about the difficulty of having one way in and out, this particular neighborhood only has one way in and out. And if we don't replace these pipes soon, they may have zero way in and out. So, Juan, that's my stalling for you to now take it from here with the details.
Okay. Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Landon. Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Councilman.
Good morning.
this morning I'm here to present the upcoming CIP project, the Boulder Rock Drive Crossing Rehabilitation Project, which we call Structure F2. It is a major roadway crossing because the pipes are larger than 48 inches. If you look at the map here on the screen, just to give you an idea of where it is, here is I-95, Palm Coast Parkway, Boulder Rock Drive, the Home Depot, just to give you an idea of where we're talking about. A little bit about the history and the current conditions. The structure currently consists of two 66-inch asphalt-coated corrugated metal pipes. These pipes were used back in the early 70s by ITT. The current rating on the structure is a 4, 5 being a failure, and 4 being in significant need of replacement. The signs of failure are along the majority of the signs of failure are along the east side of the structure. There are signs of settling on the east side of the roadway. And this is a current map here of the Boulder Rock Crossing right here. Also included in the project, we have 4 alternates. That would be replacing tearing out the concrete there by 6 Boulder Rock Drive and replacing the driveway, putting in a sidewalk right along here to continue up to the traffic light there for a crossing, and also benches and a bench and trash receptacle. And also we're replacing the neighborhood sign right here as part of the project. The proposed project, staff proposes to replace the structure with a concrete box culvert. The box culvert will have the same capacity as the existing structure, existing pipes. By using the box culvert, it will have a longer useful life. Presently, the asphalt-coated corrugated metal pipes have a useful life of about 25 to 30 years. The concrete box culvert would have a useful life of 100 years or more. This is an example of one of our completed projects that we did up in the L section on London Drive. And as you can see, there's the concrete box cover right there, new railing, and what have you. Here's our budget for the project. As I said before, the project does include 4 alternates, ranging from soil removal in the canal, the landscaping, as I said earlier. The top portion there is the stormwater capital improvement project portion, and the bottom portion is the parkway beautification. That's where we are funding some of the alternates out of as well. That would be the sign and the landscaping, the neighborhood sign and the landscaping. Our schedule... We will be having a neighbor, because of the location of the project and about 300 homes in this area, and this is the only way in or out, we thought it would be very helpful to have a neighborhood meeting for this project to make sure all of the residents are aware of what's going to be going on there. And we hope to, we should be starting the project up in mid-February. We will have a road detour. We're going to have a temporary bypass road, full 2 lanes, along with a bicycle lane and walking path. That road detour should be completed by late February. And the substantial completion of the project will be in June, and the project should be completed by July, if not earlier. Any questions?
Council questions?
Juan, does the source of funds worksheet, where did the funds come from that did the emergency repair on the waterway at Pine Lakes Parkway come from? Same source?
Pine Lakes?
Or are you... Pine Lakes and Belterre?
The Weir.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, that came out of our stormwater capital improvement funds.
So
yes.
What you're going to do here is going to... take a pretty big bite out of the budget for that. What happens if another, and I know it's not really fair to ask you this question, but what happens if another stormwater emergency were to develop in 2016?
Mr. McGuire, this is not Juan's expertise, and our finance director is not here.
Yeah,
actually, it did not come out of the Weir replacement did not come out of stormwater. It actually came out of our emergency disaster fund.
Okay.
So that's where we actually set money aside for those really unexpected events caused by,
like
by a storm.
Like tornadoes.
Yes. So in this case, it did not impact our stormwater capital improvement plan.
So if we have another stormwater weir type emergency in 2016, will it be funded by the emergency fund?
You know, it's it depends on the magnitude of it. There are times when we've made adjustments and actually funded those out of stormwater when it was possible. Mm-hmm. And then there's other times when the magnitude of it requires us to take it out of our emergency funds. So each situation is evaluated at the time.
But this project, I would characterize as an emergency, wouldn't you?
This proposed project, it's a planned emergency, if you will. In other words, it's in our capital improvement plan. We do have the funding for it.
It was on the schedule. So
the conditions that, Juan is describing would say that a disaster is imminent.
Yes. So that is why it's important to complete this project this year, so that we don't, because we're saying it could happen, is for us to actually have these pipes blow out, which would make, okay. You know, we've seen it. You know, Florida Park Drive is probably the best example, but there's a lot of...
There's an even worse, more recent example. You probably saw it in the news less than 2 weeks ago, 500 feet of the same kind of pipe collapsed in an IHOP, and 16 cars wound up in the bottom of the hole.
Yeah.
We would rather not have that.
So, but it doesn't need to come out of emergency funds because we actually planned for this project.
Thank you. You're off the hook, Juan.
Mr. DeLorenzo.
Thank you, Mayor. Juan, at the workshop we discussed extending the sidewalk and having the crosswalk at the light itself. Did I hear correctly in your presentation that we're going to be able to achieve that?
Yes. At the workshop we had talked about doing a mid-crossing, but I've since met with our traffic engineer. And we have designed an alternative that should work out nicely.
Okay, good. And also, you mentioned the neighborhood sign.
Yes.
We're going to replace it with which style from
our
inventory of signs?
Yeah, we'll replace it with our current standard. A good example is Palm Harbor, right over there by the bridge, Palm Harbor and the Palm Coast Parkway, the smaller sign that goes the entryway
for Country Clove.
Or Country Club Cove.
Clubhouse.
Yeah, some clubhouse is, is a very...
And with that size.
That type of sign, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's, you may recall, our policy now is that when we have a neighborhood sign adjacent to or in the proximity of a project, that we include that in there. We do it as an alternate to see if it's something that we can do in-house, and so it depends on what they want to charge us. If we can... do it a lot cheaper in-house, we'll do it. If, in this case, they gave us a good price, we think it's a very fair price. We couldn't do it any cheaper. We believe it makes sense for it to be part of the project.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Open the meeting to public. Anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number 10?
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. How much inconvenience would it be for the people who are living in Boulder Rock, going in and the coming out? Will there be that much inconvenience? Because I can just think of myself living there and having to go somewhere, and I know somebody that's asked me that question. So.
I can assure you it'll be a lot less inconvenience than if it collapses. We'll get an answer to you. We'll describe perhaps the bypass. Next speaker. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion of the meeting and come back to council. But first, Juan, tell us a little bit about how you're going to get through. How you're going to...
Okay. Well, that's a very good question. First of all, normal traffic will remain while the temporary road is built. Okay, so there will be no interruption with traffic at all. The temporary road will come along this side of the roadway. Actually, a portion will cut through the resident at 6 Boulder Rock Place, 6 Boulder Rock Drive. So once that road is completed, the temporary road is fully completed, then we will reroute or redirect the traffic to use that road. So it will be seamless. There will be no interruption of traffic at all. And we will have sufficient signage and, you know, and make people aware of what's coming and when it's going to happen. So that.
But once again, construction is always not a fun thing. I don't want anybody to think that, they're not going to have some construction inconvenience, but it, very temporarily. When you have trucks in the area and all those, you're going to have that type of inconvenience. But. The game plan is making sure we don't prevent somebody to get to and from their home, the buses getting to and from school,
right.
Those type of things.
Yeah.
That won't happen.
Yeah, I've actually personally sat out here in the afternoon and see how the traffic routines go and where the bus, drops the kids off at and even, watch how a FedEx truck or UPS truck goes through here. So I'm quite aware of the traffic patterns and routines that go in. We've spoken to the sheriff's office, the school board, you know, making people aware of, you know, and the fire department, making them aware of what's coming and what's going to be happening. One last thing I wanted to note as well, the design of this project was done totally in-house as well.
You indicated that the bypass road is going to impact a resident there?
Yes.
Our plans are to fully, totally, completely, absolutely restore their...
Absolutely. Up to the last...
They're okay with this?
Up to the last plant and piece of salt.
They live on the other side of the of yes. the pipe. I guess it's to their advantage.
Yes, yes. She was very kind, and we were able to get a construction easement from her as well.
So. Thank you. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number 11, selecting a mayor for 2015-16. It has been the practice of City Council. It's interesting. There are four council members, and there are 4 years in a term, and it has been our practice that each council member serves as a vice mayor once during each term that they exist. And it's also been our practice that the outgoing vice mayor gets to nominate his or her successor. Mr. McGuire?
Your Honor, I nominate Heidi Shipley.
Is there a second?
I second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor of designating Heidi Shipley as vice mayor for the coming year, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. Guess whose turn comes next? Okay, agenda item number 12, liaison appointments to various service organizations for 2015-2016. You have in your agenda your current, I won't call them assignments, but your current volunteer liaison duties. Does anyone wish to change anything that's on that list? Mr. McGuire is on the TDC. I am a representative to the Flagler League of Cities. Ms. Shipley is liaison to the Florida Department of Justice. Mr. Nobile to Flagler County Chamber of Commerce. Mr. DiLorenzo to the Water Management District. Ms. Shipley to Stuart Marchman. And Mr. DiLorenzo to the River to the Sea.
Good for me.
Everybody happy? Is there a motion to approve the list as published?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. This brings us to the consent agenda, items 13 through 22. At this time, I would invite any member of the public who wishes to speak on any one of those items to do so. We will then offer council the opportunity to remove any items from the consent agenda for separate discussion. Otherwise, items 13 through 22 will be approved in one motion. Anyone from the public wish to remove? Speak. 22. Anyone else wish to speak on anything? Jack, do you want to speak on it, or do you just want to hear us?
I want to hear what you had to say first.
Okay. Does any council member wish to remove anything other than item 22?
Yes, sir.
Is there a motion to approve consent agenda items 13 through 21?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number 2. This is a resolution approving a budget amendment for fiscal year 2014-15 related to City Council travel and training expenses. Mr. Landon, would you care to explain this one?
Yes. Each year, I mean, a budget is obviously staff puts together an estimate, presents it to City Council. When you adopt your budget, you're basically adopting our estimates for that year. Each year, as we close out the books for the previous year, in this case, last fiscal year ending September 30th, we have to make sure that you can't go over your in budget, if you will. So if our estimates came short and we actually went over given budget, then we come forth to City Council every year to do a final amendment to the budget so the auditors know that we've gone through the process and been transparent about it. It's actually a good thing and probably seldom do you only see one budget amendment at the end of the year, but this year we only had one budget amendment that is necessary. In other words, staff did a great job of estimating overall, but we missed one, and that was we did not anticipate the fact that we had two new council members, and both of them went to new council training with the Florida League of Cities. That's not something we have every year. So in this case, with the fact that we are both council members stepped up and went to the Florida League of Training for new council members, this city council budget went over slightly. Most budget could absorb this one line item overage, but city council's budget is one of the smallest we have, and so it's a small budget and could not absorb it and need the budget amendment to stay within the parameters of good financial accounting at the end. So Mr. Quinn is asking for approval of this budget amendment to keep the auditors happy. If that,
let me just comment, if I may. The training that we're talking about, which is offered by the Florida League of Cities, sometimes called the EMO, it's elected municipal officials, is training in the complexities of doing this job. It is not mandatory. It's not required. Over the years, we've had some council members take the training. We've had some choose not to take the training. But I'm very pleased that our two new council members both took the training. It makes them better at their job. So I'm all in favor of this. This is a good expenditure. Council comments, since it's been taken off the agenda. Seeing none, we'll open to meeting the public. And from the public, we should be heard on agenda item number 22.
When you say council travel and training expenses, does that include ground transportation? In other words, I don't know where this, these training sessions are, but do they get a city car to go there, or do they use their own car? Or and how's that expense
determined?
Determined, right.
We'll get an answer to that. In fact, Mr. Nobile, you're one of the participants. Where was the EMO training this year?
The EMO was in Jacksonville, Florida, and it was great, and I learned a lot. So,
and how did you get there?
I drove my car.
And City Council does get reimbursement for mileage on their personal vehicles. At the, Chris, who sets the rate? Is it $12 a mile?
No, it's at the IRS rate, which varies every year. It's currently 57.5 cents per mile. Mileage reimbursement. Any city travel and training, both for the council and for the employees, includes the cost of ground transport, as Mr. Carroll had mentioned, whether it's by city vehicle or personal vehicle in the event that a city vehicle is not available. The actual cost of the conference itself, of course, is a cost for the actual program. Required lodging and then per diem meals based on the IRS per diem schedule for meals.
Questions? Additional council questions, comments, or a motion on agenda item number 22?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries without objection. This brings us to the public participation portion of the meeting. This is the opportunity for the public to speak on any item not on today's agenda. Please come up to the podium, give us your name, and limit your contribution to 3 minutes.
Good morning. Vincent McGorry, Palm Coast. Council salaries. Present council salaries total approximately $50,000 a year. Proposed, a 324% increase to $35,000 annual salary would increase council cumulative salaries to $175,000, up $125,000, and this excludes any potential health benefits. One of the major principles relative to the incorporation effort was that the city council be composed of civic-minded citizens who had the capacity and ability to perform the duties of the position. Council salaries were never intended to provide for a full-time compensation package.
There are approximately 95 cities in Florida. I do not know the breakdown between strong and weak mayor. However, I do not hear a clamor from these entities to raise salaries 324%. Implications, if enacted, are you a full-time council members on the job every day making decisions reserved for the city manager? Does this negate the need for a city manager or reduction in manager positions? What about the malfeasance rules and regulations? Is this ultimately a migration to a strong mayor form of government? Will this require a charter review and citizen approval? A comparison of sister city council salaries show that your current salary is in range. Deltona, population 80,000, 8,900 per year. Ormond Beach, population 40,000, 11,000. Port Orange, population 57,000, 13,600. Yet local media runs an ad comparing your salaries to county and constitutional officers instead of sister city comparisons. You knew what the job entailed when you ran for office. Why the rhubarb now? Conversely, one of the tenets of the proposal is would attract a more diverse individual base of applicants. If this is true, why does this council refuse to lower the 10% of salaries required or $1,062 to run for council? In New Hampshire, you can run for the president nomination for $1,000. Deltona, 3% or $267. Ormond, 1% or $110. Port Orange, 50 cards. Mayor, I have asked this question respectfully twice and have not received an answer. I would also like to note and congratulate the citizens of Palm Coast for their new city hall. But I would like to remind the council that we, former members of the Home Rule Coalition, gave 5 years of our life dedicated to making this great city, and we never received a penny. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Tony Palermo, Palm Coast. Just as a quick question, and I'm not sure how this can be answered or not, but if the salary increase is taken into effect on a per hour basis, what does that break down to? And how many hours is the normal weekly purview of the council? Are you here on a 40-hour week basis, 10-hour week basis, 4-hour week basis? And if it is, whatever it is, what does that break down to on a per hour basis?
Thank you. We'll try to answer that question. Next speaker. So you don't approach the podium. We'll close the public portion. We can get back to council. Mr. Nobile, would you like to?
I think right now I was calculating myself. So right now I make about $6 an hour based on what I did not calculate any other number because all the other numbers are just smoke until, you know what I mean, until we figure, but you can base it on that. Like I said, and I think I said this in the workshop, I roughly put in 30 hours a week, and I'm pretty sure that most of the rest of the council puts in more than that, than I do. But that's where we are right now. And I don't want to get into the other question. I don't remember if there were any questions or statements.
Well, there were questions that Mr. Liguori, would this impact the role of the city manager? Would it lead to a strong mayor?
No. I mean, all these things. One of the things I would like is whatever we decide, because I know in our ordinances in our charter, the salaries are an ordinance change, correct?
Correct.
So we don't need to put this in a referendum. But I would suggest if we do anything, that we do put it to a referendum so that it's not just us making that. We can make the suggestion, but it should ultimately be up to the people whether they want to go with that or not.
Anyone else wish to comment?
I figure I make $4.61 an hour.
Now we have to decide whether or not you're overpaid or not. Yeah, it's you see city council 4 times a month, 2 workshops and 2 meetings. I can assure you, I don't know where I fall, but there's a lot more time than that. Preparation, meeting with residents, attending city functions, ribbon cuttings, meeting with constituents, answering emails. There's quite a bit of time behind the scenes.
You know, Your Honor, I spend a lot of time with the city staff in order to prepare for these meetings. You, if you want to find the answer, and I've said this before, if you wanted to really find out what's going on behind an agenda item, you spend time with the appropriate staff leader, and in some cases with the city manager, who's normally very tied up.
Okay. Discussion by city councils of matters not on the agenda. Mr. DiLorenzo, why don't we start with you, sir?
I have nothing.
Mr. Nobile?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. McGuire?
No, I'm going to take my $4.61 and take it up to McDonald's and let a $15-an-hour guy fill an order for me.
But you've seen what McDonald's... Well, never mind. Discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
How much is he making?
I am not going to get into my hourly rate, but I have no comments.
Discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda.
I just have a few announcements. Tonight is Food Truck Tuesday. It is here at Central Park, but with the new facility, I think they're going to kind of relocate it and tie it into this facility somewhat. So
last one for the year, isn't it, Mr. Lennon?
I'm sure so, we don't have one in December.
Yes.
It starts at 5 and goes till 8, so it's becoming very, very popular. We are getting into the holiday season. We have regular council meetings, as always, scheduled until the second council meeting in December. So that is, I believe, the 15th of December. So nothing changes on your schedule. After the 15th of December, we don't hold the workshop that would fit between Christmas and New Year's. And then the first meeting in January is always if on an as-needed basis if we need it. Our tree lighting ceremony, just getting into the holidays is killing me, but it's not far away. Tree lighting ceremony here at Central Park is November 30th this year, so last day of November at 6 p.m. And that's always a good time. We do that each year. Also had a couple of other announcements. I wanted to further highlight our finance department today with the awards initially, but Chris Quinn has also been selected in the inaugural leadership class for the Florida Government Finance Officers Association. So that's quite an honor to have him selected at the very first leadership class that organization put together.
And tag on that, Mr. Lannon, and this is related to me. I can't remember which national organization just did a study but said that the state of Florida is the 39th worst state in the union in terms of their legislation. Sunshine areas of the law and in the ways that business was conducted at the state level. So, you know, in a state where maybe our state government is nothing to write home to mother about, for a local city to have a finance department that garners these honors, I think makes it even more elevated because of where they're doing it.
Yes, and these are not just Florida, but these are our national recognitions mm-hmm. that we're receiving. Very, very positive. And I have to add that finance is just one of many. You know, if you think about the just last meeting with the Green Award and a lot of the other things we're doing. So very, very fortunate to have the quality staff we have. Lastly, we have just got an announcement, went official yesterday. Each year, the Northeast Regional Council, Florida Regional Council, holds a regional awards ceremony and recognizes a variety of selections of categories for regional efforts. City staff submitted, I believe, 3 applications this year. We have received two awards. Island Walk, our the rehab of our Palm Harbor Shopping Center, won the Planning and Growth Management Award, recognizing the significance of having that shopping center almost going dark to something that's very alive and exciting right now. And then a huge honor, city staff nominated Mayor Netz to the Regional Leadership Award, and he has won that. So our mayor is... very well deserved. So Mayor Netz will... there's a ceremony coming up here shortly where he will formally receive that. But I know the announcement went out yesterday. So congratulations, Mayor. So that's all I have.
Thank you for the recognition. And obviously, I will thank the Regional Council. But I want to quote myself about regionality. What we do together is far better than what we can do on our own. And that's the whole thinking behind regionalism in Florida. Happy to be a part of it. Mr. Vice Mayor?
Move to adjourn.
We stand adjourned. Thank you all for your time.